the polls in this economy. I'm on leave. Each word sliced through the air. I haven't been home in 13 months, so yes, I will be staying with my family. His gaze shifted to me. Besides, my old room has the benefit of giving me a view of Greer's bedroom window each morning. What more can a man ask for?
Boaz, did you need something? I restrained the urge to throttle him. Or are you only here to validate my decision to invest in blackout curtains?
I can't find the key to Jolene.
He indicated a toolbox and a bulging plastic bag he'd left on the top step.
Figured the old girl was due for a tune-up.
Oh. I deflated. Guess I should have seen this coming. I palmed the keychain off the console table where I'd dropped it last night. Here you go.
Tuck in your bottom lip.
He tapped my chin up with his fingertip.
Amelie told me you've been using her to get to work. I'm not here to steal your transportation.
Volkov uttered a growl that dared Boaz to try. But we both ignored him. She's yours. You can take her anytime you want. Generous of me to give him back his own bike. I'll figure something out. Really, it's okay. He shook his head at my stubbornness.
Do you have a dollar?
Yeah. I pulled a wrinkled bill from my pocket and offered it to him. What do I owe you for the oil and the filter I see in that bag? A dollar won't cover those.
Congratulations. You just bought yourself a bike.
He turned on his heel.
I'll draw up the papers. You can sign them later.
You can't sell me Jolene. I chased him across the porch. You love that bike.
I bought a new one this morning.
My jaw dropped. Why would you...
Don't pester me, Squirt, or I might change my mind.
He raised his hand as he set off toward the garage.
Later.
Later, I murmured.
I should go.
A flush warmed my cheeks. I'd forgotten Volkov was still there. Sorry about that.
You have nothing to apologize for, and certainly not to me.
He took my hand and brushed his lips across my knuckles.
I look forward to seeing you again soon. I will call to make arrangements.
You have my number. It came out as an accusation. Why does that not surprise me? The sharp edge of his grin made zero apologies for him getting what he wanted. Thanks for the gift. I trailed him down the steps onto the lawn where his driver waited.
I'll think on what you said.
And the implications of all he hadn't said.
Good.
He inclined his head.
Good night, Greer.
Night, Mr. Volkov.
Denil, he corrected. We're friends, remember?
Denil, I agreed, willing to play nice until I got my answers. Enjoy the rest of your night. The bangle caught the light as I jogged back up on the porch, and I whirled it around my wrist. I had to admit, it was as pretty as it was creepy. Since I had yet to go out tonight, I curled my toes against the cool planks, shut my eyes, and brushed my thoughts against the wards encircling Woolworth House. A percussive blast radiated through my skull as a warning chimed in my head. A new quadrant had been weakened within feet of the last assault, almost as though someone were systematically checking Wooly's defenses. That was not good. Hard to know who presented the more tempting target. Me or Wooly? Neither of us were inviolable. Wooly should have reached out to me when she was in danger, not let it pass. Unless the reason she no longer mentally pinged me when the wards got buzzed was because I was too weak to hear her sound the alarm. That weakness might also explain why she'd rolled out the red carpet for our fangy guest. After spending time with Volkov, I had no doubt he'd orchestrated our first meeting to occur at a time when I was professionally obligated not to turn tail and run. But he'd also chosen an environment where I would be surrounded by witnesses, despite the late hour. Humans who he couldn't reveal himself to on that scale without dire consequences, last seed or not. So there was that. He had wanted me comfortable and relaxed, not intimidated. That left me with the second vampire as a possible suspect, the one with a master eager to make my acquaintance. Or, even worse, another necromancer. Rivals might have been attempting to crack Wooly like the safe she was all along. Her treasure trove of necromantic knowledge and artifacts were priceless to the society. Desperation could be making them reckless now that I was home to defend her. Of course, my being home might also be the issue. Maud had been ruthless in her pursuit of knowledge, and she had earned her fair share of enemies. Now, I had to wonder if I might have inherited them, along with everything else. 4. Dawn warmed my shoulders as I drove Jolene out to Tybee Island. Her sultry purr after having Boaz's hands on her kept my thoughts cycling back to him. A dollar. He'd sold me his bike, the one that cost him 3 summers worth of grass-cutting money, for a freaking dollar. And he hadn't stopped there, either. He had more than changed her oil. Golden light from the street lamps caressed the fuel tank, her crimson and black paint glossy under the layers of wax he had lovingly applied after washing off the grime caked on her from months of hard use. It hadn't slipped my notice that my gas tank was now sitting on full, too. He had laughed himself silly when he realized I still wore the jacket I had inherited from one of his exes. Jerk. Let him laugh. It's not like I could afford to buy a new one. And it fit. Okay, fine. It zipped. I wore a corset 5 nights a week. Breathing was overrated. Ahead, the road thinned into a single lane, and that was a generous assessment. I bumped along, avoiding potholes, until I reached a bungalow with mint green siding and peppermint pink shutters. White trim accented the eaves, and clear plastic sealed the windows to keep in the cool, like the house was hard candy still in the wrapper. I parked in the sandy driveway, shucked my gear, and approached the front door. It swung open before I got there, and a tiny woman with dark brown skin and long white braids squinted at me through Coke bottle glasses from the threshold.
A coccinelle.
She removed her glasses and wiped the thick lenses on the hem of her faded tank top.
Tell me, bébé, this is today and not tomorrow?
Tomorrow is still a day away, Odette. I embraced her frail shoulders to anchor her in the present. Sorry it took me so long to visit. Odette Lecomte was a seer, and she tended to get her yesterdays, todays, and tomorrows scrambled. People came from all over the world to invite her to sift their futures through her gnarled fingers. But her value, at least to me, wasn't in her guidance, but in what treasures she had unearthed while divining possible eventualities. Her vast network of clients made her a verifiable encyclopedia of knowledge, both common and forbidden.
Blah.
She held me at arm's length and grinned through blackened teeth.
Wounded animals heal best in their dens. You owe no one an apology for doing whatever it takes to survive.
The sentiment, so similar to Maud's credo, left my eyes burning raw.
Come inside.
She hauled me into her living room and shoved me down onto a plush sofa the off-white color of bones.
Tell Odette what you need, and you shall have it.
I made a new friend. I held up my wrist and shook the bangle. He gave me this. Any idea how to get it off?
Madeus.
She made the sign of the goddess.
Why would you want to do a crazy thing like that?
Not the reaction I'd expected. Are you saying I should wear it?
Evie and Maud didn't agree on much where you were concerned, but neither wanted me to hold the power of your future in my hands. Both wanted you to forge your own path, make your own mistakes.
The casual mention of my mother knocked the wind out of me, and Odette noticed my breathlessness.
You look so much like your mama. The goddess weeps.
She cupped my cheeks between her palms.
What would she say if she could see us now?
She laughed softly.
Other than for me to keep my nose in my own business.
I don't know, I answered honestly. I don't remember much about her. Evangeline Marchand died when I was 5. I can't recall her face from memory, but I studied Maud's albums often enough to know I saw a younger version of her each time I looked in the mirror. Thin lips, high cheekbones, sharp chin. I inherited those from Mom. The dark tangle of my hair belonged to her, too. Whoever my father was, he hadn't contributed much. Not to my DNA and not to my life. But I got his amber eyes.
Most the pity, Odette sympathized. Maybe if she had been allowed to choose.
She flexed her fingers as though recalling how she had once held Mom's hand, guided her.
Evie walked her path with her eyes wide open. There was only ever one outcome available to her once she knew the end I foresaw.
That end came in the form of a car wreck the morning after we arrived in Savannah. Maud admitted once, on a night when guilt had tipped back more than one wine bottle, that she had been the one who begged Mom to stop zigzagging across the country. The best thing, in her opinion, was for us both to put down roots. But the second Mom stopped being a moving target, death had struck her down. Maud never forgave herself for her advice, yet another reason she wanted Odette blind to my future. The lovingly renovated carriage house Maud had intended to be our home never received its promised family. Instead, a kind man dressed in black set me down in Wooly's parlor the morning after the funeral to explain that Maud had been named my legal guardian. She formally adopted me when I turned 13. Though she could have passed for a woman in her mid-50s, she was 425 the summer we met, well on her way to the maximum life expectancy of a necromancer. Any hope for biological children had died centuries earlier. That didn't mean having an heir of her own shaping didn't appeal to her. Up until that point, her nephew, Linus Andreas Lawson III, had served as both Woolworth and Lawson heir. But in order for my claim to be recognized by the society, I had to first take her last name so that her line might be continued. Considering all she had given me, how much I had desperately wanted to belong to her, to anyone, I decided the cost of my last name was a fair price for that acceptance. The bangle, I said, dragging Odette's eyes back into focus and my thoughts from the past. What can you tell me about it?
They're called avowals. They're a symbol of a blood oath given between two consenting parties.
Her lips compressed.
Gifts of this caliber are rarer than the last seeds themselves. Pins, brooches, bangles, rings. Each carries a significance. Such baubles are reserved for clan heirs and persons of great import the vampires want protected from tampering by enemy clans. And also for lovers, wives, children.
Throat dry, I asked, what is the symbolism of a bangle?
The tube is seamless. There is no end or beginning.
She worried the piece of metal affixed in the center.
This is a promise that your union will be the same.
I almost swallowed my tongue. Our what?
The metal is a curious part, she prattled on. What is its purpose?
When I put it on, these needle-like things stabbed me in the wrist. Are they not supposed to do that?
The band should be unadorned, a statement in its own right. But this one is not. that it wanted to taste your blood.
She tapped a finger against her bottom lip. Can you remove it? Have you tried? I wanted a second opinion first. I offered a weak smile.
Well, go on, then.
She folded her hands in her lap.
Let's see what it does.
That's not as comforting as I'd hoped. I slid the bangle off my hand, as easy as pie.
Guess it comes off easier than it goes on.
She gestured for me to go ahead, and I put it back on. Well, that went... I hissed as its prongs stabbed me. Dang it!
Tell me what the vampire said when he offered this to you.
He offered me an alliance with Clan Volkov. I scrunched up my nose. He said I would be drowning in such offers soon, and he wanted his to be the first and the most generous.
An alliance?
She chortled.
What did you say?
That I couldn't imagine why he would want to align with me, and that I couldn't possibly accept this, or him, until I had answers. He convinced me to keep the bangle, but as to the rest, what does this mean? Her eyes drifted closed for a moment before a frustrated growl parted her lips.
I thought perhaps I could divine the future for Monsieur Volkov and seek your answers there, but he flew too close to your son and has been burned from my psychic eye.
She tapped the side of her head. Sometimes I glimpse your future from the corner of another's destiny.
It's all right.
I took her papery hands in mine. Don't strain yourself trying.
I have a theory, if it helps.
Her fingers tightened around mine.
Until and unless you accept his proposal, the bangle will remain unmastered. He's released it into your care for now, but it must verify your identity prior to each wearing. Should you accept it, I imagine it will be attuned to you, and the metal removed.
That makes sense.
I spun it around my wrist. As long as I keep it on, I can avoid the bite. Her eyes glittered.
Avoiding the bite seems unlikely if you continue your dalliance with Volkov.
Hold up. There is no dalliance. I clamped a hand on the side of my throat in reflex. No one is getting dallied.
Her tone gentled. You do understand what an offer of alliance means, don't you, bébé?
He wants to unite Clan Volkov and the Woolworth bloodline. Dread ballooned in my chest.
Oh. Yes. Oh.
Odette patted my cheek.
You was a Woolworth heir. For all that they stripped you of your title and fortune, the match is a good one, if unorthodox. To offer up what must be their heritor instead of a clan noble speaks to their hunger for your acceptance.
Plus, I'll be dead in 400 or so years, and he can move on to a wife of his choosing. What's a half millennium in the grand scheme of his immortality? A drop in the bucket.
Men like Volkov are not for keeping, not for loving, she agreed sadly. They are for savoring during the time we possess them, and then releasing them when we can no longer hold them.
Nice of her to gloss over the bits where he would remain forever young while I aged. Slowly, yes, but no less surely. What woman's pride could survive waking one day and realizing your husband could pass for your son? Your grandson? Not that children would be an option for us. Maud had never hinted at planning an arranged marriage for me, but such mutually beneficial unions were the threads that bound high society families. You couldn't walk through an assemblage without rubbing elbows with the victim of a marriage of convenience.
There's more I haven't told you.
I started with the hinky wards, segued into vampire stalking me for his friend deficient master, and ended with his implication the Grand Dame had a vested interest in me. None of this makes sense. The old seer inclined her head, eyes distant.
We are limited to what the goddess reveals to us.
What the vampire said. I linked my fingers in my lap. I didn't know if the Grand Dame signed my pardon. Talking to Odette, with her hazy eyes and dreamy voice, helped loosen the words that wouldn't come when I was around Amelie and Boaz. The drugs used to subdue the inmates, to keep us quiet and content to lie in our own filth, drove us quietly insane. Bile splashed the back of my throat, but I forced myself to keep going. When the sentinels came for me, I didn't believe they were real. What they promised sounded too much like a fever dream, one I'd had a million times since I was assigned a cell. Oh, Greer. I signed whatever they put in front of me without reading it. I tried, but my brain wasn't working right. When they tossed me into detox, the clock on the wall in the clinic gave me some sense of time. I was confined to a bed for a month while they flushed the drugs from my system. I wasn't allowed to leave until the withdrawal stopped, and for a while they weren't sure they would. A bitter smile curled my lips. I wasn't meant to leave. They weren't as careful with my doses as they should have been. Odette wept beside me, her thin shoulders hunched with sobs. I should have gathered her in my arms, comforted her. But Atramentus loomed too dark in the shadows gathered in this room for me to do more than fight the instinctive scrabble of my lizard brain to lock down those memories, tuck them in a corner of my mind where no one would stumble across them again. Least of all me. Weak. I was so weak. Worthless. I couldn't face the memory of the punishment, let alone the crime. I have to go. I shot to my feet. It's late. I should be getting home before Wooly worries.
You don't have to rush off.
She wiped her cheeks dry.
You could stay the day in the guest room.
I appreciate the offer, but I can't. As much as confiding those memories of Atramentus hurt her, enduring my night terrors might break her. I'll come back soon. I promise.
All right.
She followed me to the door in a whirl of sandalwood and opened her arms. Despite the fact she stood inches away, the distance was too great for me to close.
Oh, baby, what have they done to you?
This frail woman with one foot in this world and one in the next was the last remaining bridge between the two most influential figures in my life. But instead of her embrace recalling happier times, walking the beach, the gulls crying overhead, the surf nursing my toes, her pity burned hotter than those extinguished summer suns. Touching her would have burned me and my fragile pride to ashes, so I fled to Wooly, where I could hide behind my tattered wards in the comfort of my own home. Much to my relief, no vampires lurked on my property when I arrived. The visit with Odette had stretched into early morning, and sunlight had burned the shadows from the porch. That didn't stop me from carrying the stake, which I noticed Boaz had sharpened after meeting Volkov, at my side while I walked from the garage to the front door. The lock snapped open for me in quick succession. "Sorry I'm late." I patted the doorframe on my way in. I drove out to Tybee and visited Odette. I figured she might be able to shed some light on the Volkov situation. Somewhere, a floorboard groaned with apprehension. "You're the one who let him in," I reminded her. "Now it's up to me to figure out what to do about him." Boaz swung around the corner with a half-eaten sandwich in his hand.
"Who are we doing what about?"
The door slammed shut behind me, or else I might have stumbled right back out onto the porch in my shock. Drawing myself up taller, I squared my shoulders. "What the heck are you doing in my house?"
"Figured turnabout was fair play."
Boaz took another bite.
Why should you have all the fun? I didn't even break in. I asked Wooly if I could wait until you got back, and she opened the door.
The chandelier dimmed, its crystals tinkling.
Didn't mean to throw you under the bus, girl.
He placed the hand holding his sandwich over his heart, as true a vow as any man has ever made.
Greer, this is all my fault. I acted alone. Wooly tried to stop me, but I forced my way in.
The lights warmed to normal levels, and all was forgiven. I rolled my eyes at their antics.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me.
He extended an envelope stained with a giant, muddy boot print to me.
It must have been pushed through the mail slot after you left. I didn't notice it had stuck to my foot until I reached the kitchen. I cleaned it up as best I could. I don't think the card inside is damaged.
The spidery scrawl across the front of the envelope would have told me who sent the card, even if I hadn't recognized the grapefruit essential oil Dame Lawson wore in lieu of perfume.
This can't be good. Who's it from?
He continued, stuffing his face.
There was no return address.
This is Dame Lawson's handwriting. Boaz choked on his next swallow.
What does that old bat want with you?
I have no idea. I smoothed my thumb over the sealed flap and wished it could stay that way.
I'm not sure I want to find out.
Sandwich forgotten, he prowled closer.
Do you want me to open it?
It's not a bomb. It won't explode in my hands. Unless she hexed it. Boaz grunted once. I replayed my words and winced. I didn't mean...
You can say bomb around me.
He chuckled.
Explosion. Boom. Bam. Blam. All good. I promise.
Ducking my head, I took the out I was given. That's when I noticed him scuffing his boot, the ribbon from the gift box Volkov had given me trampled underfoot. Boaz must have been snooping when I got home and dropped it in his rush to pull together his innocent act.
You're lucky I wasn't going to recycle that. Volkov caught me off guard.
He snatched up the grungy ribbon and slapped it across my palm.
I didn't know there were other guys sniffing around you.
His honest surprise that another man had shown interest in me stung my already smarting pride. Clearly, the thought I might have a boyfriend had never crossed his mind. Had he believed all he had to do was open his arms for me to fall into them? Though I had primed him to believe that, I still snapped. I'm not a freaking fire hydrant. A snort ripped out of Boaz, and I briefly wondered how Amelie felt about being an only child. Light as a breeze, he snatched the envelope from my hand and tore into the letter. I had fallen for his ruse, hook, line, and sinker. I ought to know better by now. Delighted I was such an easy mark, he lifted it high over his head so I couldn't reach it even when I jumped, and read it out loud.
Your presence has been requested at the inauguration ceremony for...
A frown knitted his heavy brow.
The society has named a new Grand Dame.
Who? I snatched the invitation while he was too stunned to fight back.
Clarice Woolworth Lawson.
Maud's not-so-younger sister was rising to power, and Dame Lawson was offering me a front-row seat. Learning I was indebted to the Grand Dame had chilled me to my marrow back when I thought the vampire meant Abayomi Balewa, the woman who'd sentenced me to Atramentus, had freed me. But the timing of his visit, and now this announcement, dropped ice cubes into my bloodstream. Dame Lawson, cast in the role of savior, was as unlikely as Boaz taking a vow of celibacy.
Come on, Squirt.
Boaz hooked his arm behind me and guided me down onto a couch into the living room.
This must be a formality. There's no law saying you have to accept.
Accept? Hysterical laughter bubbled up the back of my throat. The last time I faced the society. I clamped a hand over my mouth and ran for the downstairs bathroom, where I emptied my stomach. I knelt there dry-heaving for several minutes before a cold washcloth pressed against the base of my neck.
Go away. You gave me the stomach flu when you were 8 by throwing up in my face when I picked you up and swung you around the room too fast. We're past this.
Privacy, I rasped.
Pretending you're okay when you're clearly not. Don't do that. Not with me.
The order would have rolled off me like water off a duck's back had I not detected his genuine worry.
I visited Odette.
I braced my forehead against the toilet seat.
I talked to her about things.
Our conversation about Mom, about Atramentis, about Volkov had lingered too close to the surface of my thoughts for me to keep them down at the mention of Dame Lawson's big promotion.
I'm glad.
He refolded the rag to give me a cooler spot.
She's a good confidant for you. Not as stellar to me, but not a bad second choice.
Friends, tilt-a-whirl, mechanic, breaker and enterer, and now confidant. I marveled at the size of his ego. I don't know how he managed to cram it into the bathroom with us. You can't be everything to me.
How do you know?
The cool weight at my nape vanished.
You haven't let me try.
I did let you try, I contradicted him. You just weren't interested.
You were a kid.
He scoffed, offended.
You should be glad I wasn't interested. What kind of pervert would that have made me?
I still thought I loved you. Heaving a groan, I propped my legs under me and wobbled to the sink to brush my teeth with my finger and a squirt of sample-sized toothpaste scrounged from the medicine cabinet.
It still hurt when you didn't love me back. I've always loved you. Just not the kind of love you wanted from me.
His fingers trailed the side of my arm.
You were like a second little sister to me. Forgive me if it took time for me to shift gears and stop seeing you in those ridiculous pigtails you used to wear. And that rainbow jumpsuit. Gods, that slayed me. You were the cutest thing.
I met his eyes in the mirror. Somehow this is more embarrassing than vomiting in front of you.
I don't know where this is going.
He wrapped one heavy arm across my shoulders in front, his forearm hot against my collarbone.
I don't know if it's going anywhere at all.
He kissed the side of my head in brotherly concern.
But the love, that part we've got down pat. You gripped my heart in pudgy fingers the morning I caught you hurling mud pies at Amelie, and you still haven't let go.
Another kiss. This one softer, warmer, but still chaste.
It's the rest we have to figure out. If you want to try.
For a single moment, I caved to an old weakness and leaned against him. His grip tightened across my shoulders, pressing my spine against the wall of muscle at my back. Cradled in his arms, I was safe and cherished, and both those things made my chest ache after having gone so long without them. But the cost of gambling with this man could be losing this easy flirtation between us. I had never looked at him as a brother, but I had always considered him family, and the risks outweighed the rewards in my book.
Stop perving on me and let me go to bed.
I broke his hold and exited the bathroom. Alone.
Spoil sport.
He strolled to the front door, but hesitated on the threshold.
Greer, burn that invitation. Pretend you never saw it. That woman lost all rights to call you family or expect your support when she didn't speak up for you at your sentencing.
Having nothing to add to that, I left him to say his goodnights to Wooly and wandered into the kitchen for a glass of warm milk before bed. Visiting Odette had left the center of my chest raw and aching, and I longed for what had once been a cure-all. I'm going to kill him, I muttered at the fridge, which Boaz had stocked with all my favorite junk food, in addition to a few practical staples. A sticky note clung to a package of cheese slices, and I peeled it off the label. Block letters spelled out the cost of my groceries. You owe me lunch. Shame curled in my gut as I accepted his offering. His concern warmed me, but I hated him thinking I was a charity case. First the bike, and now this. Tomorrow I would have to set him straight. But tonight, I poured myself a tall glass and nuked it to perfection with a sappy grin in place. I was on my way upstairs with my treat when I spotted the plastic bag on the counter. I poked it with a finger, revealing an opened package with one cuttle bone left and a bag of seed twisted off with a sandwich tie. Another note clung to the packaging. I read it out loud, though I was sure Wooly already had the scoop. You take worse care of that zombie bird than Macon did. I found him zooming around your bathroom, crapping everywhere. I cleaned up the mess and put the little turd in his cage. You can thank me later. I will accept dirty pics as payment. Left you something to pose in. I tossed his note aside and skidded into the living room to find Keet dozing in his cage. Boaz had positioned the stand near the picture window overlooking the rose garden, exactly where I'd intended for him to go. It's not like Keet required seed or water to live, just the occasional drop of blood. But he seemed to enjoy the catharsis of cracking seeds, and some of it must be going down the hatch, since he pooped enough to be an ostrich. Wary of what other gifts Boaz might have left me, I jogged upstairs and shoved open the door to my room. I'm not sure what I expected. Lace? Silk? Something highly inappropriate. A scrap of fabric that wouldn't cover anything. What I found was an olive drab tee that smelled like him and could wrap around me three times. The reminder he knew what it was like to wake from fractured memories with a scream lodged in his throat soothed my earlier irritation enough that I shucked my top and slid into his, snapped a picture, and texted it to him. No caption. Anything I could think of now felt too much like an invitation, and I'd already received one too many of those for one night. 5. I woke in a nest of twisted sheets on the floor in my usual corner. Guess not even Boaz's shirt was enough to ward off the dreams. Oh well, it was the thought that counted. Wooly, usually the first one to prod me after an episode, left me blissfully alone. But then again, I was taking her advice and talking to people. That must have been enough to earn me a gold star for effort. The clatter of dishes jarred me, and I leapt to my feet, pulse thundering in my ears. Wooly? A hiss escaped the floor register, a sigh of disappointment that I thought she would let in trouble. But she had welcomed a vampire, and Boaz, whose middle name, I was pretty certain, was Trouble. Maybe it was time to educate the old girl on the meaning of stranger danger. After pulling on a bra and a pair of pajama bottoms, I shoved open my door and padded into the hall. That's when the dueling scents hit me. Coffee. Onions. Cheese. Three of my favorite things. I trotted downstairs into the kitchen and came skidding to a halt. Amelie? Not the Pritchard sibling I'd expected to see. What is it with your family breaking into my house? Greer? Is that you? She hunched her spine, pretended to gasp and wheeze, and used the spatula as the world's shortest cane. It's been so long. I thought you'd forgotten about your old pal, Amelie. It's been, like, a day. I crept past her to sniff whatever she was cooking. And I've been busy. Clearly. She plucked at my shirt. Please tell me I don't have to make this breakfast for three. She lifted a halved cherry tomato off the cutting board and held it against my flaming cheek. Cherry tomato red. That, my friend, is the color of guilt. She bit into the slice, then yelled, Guilt! Get your guilt here! Grab it while it's hot and fresh, people! Boaz left me the shirt. I clamped a hand over her mouth. He wasn't still in it. I don't need details. She pretended to heave. Really, I don't. I took the plate she offered me, then poured us both mugs of coffee and carried it all to the bar. What brings you by so early? I took a bite of garden omelet and groaned. Not that I mind if you want to do this for me every night. You only think it tastes good because you've been living on oatmeal. Trust me, no one else will eat my cooking. You leave a few eggshells in one time, and suddenly you've earned a spot on Worst Cooks in America. She tucked into her meal. I wanted to make sure, after everything that's happened, you're still okay with taking my shifts tonight. I got you covered. I waved away her concern. Did you find out where you're going yet? Nope. She glared at her fork. I asked my folks again, and they fed me more super-secret Pritchard family gobbledygook. I shifted in my seat, uncomfortable. Amelie noticed and pounced. What's got you so twitchy? Her nose wrinkled. Unless my brother is the reason you can't sit still on a hard surface, that you can take to your grave. Glowering at her, I resisted the urge to defend my honor and stabbed a tomato instead. I heard the society is about to name a new grand dame. Boaz told me about the invitation. Amelie shoved her plate of half-eaten food away. I couldn't tell if she didn't like her own cooking or if the topic had turned her stomach. Either way, I was making eyes at her omelet. She's got balls to issue you an invitation. I hope they turn blue waiting on you to show up to her soiree. Will your family attend? Her mother, Annabeth Pritchard, served as matron of their family. The voices of low society members might not be heard as clearly as those of the high society, but the swearing in of a new grand dame was meant to bridge the gap between classes. You can take notes and report back to me. I doubt I'll go. She shrugged. I'll ask my folks for the highlights. What about Boaz? He looked good in a penguin suit, even if he hated acting grown up long enough to tie his patent leather shoes. None of us want him set free in a room full of people who turned the other cheek while you were sentenced. She wrapped her hands around her warm mug. He spent 5 years learning how to kill, and our parents want to keep his itchy trigger finger scratched in other ways. Her comment swept chills down my arms. What exactly does Boaz do for the army?
That's classified, he growled from the doorway. Amelie, it's time to go.
Really, Wooly? I kicked the back of the bar with the ball of my foot. Do I even get a say in who comes in my house? The lights flickered and died until the only sound left in the kitchen was the hum of major appliances.
You forget, she is the house.
Boaz crossed to me, his eyesight keen in the dark, and tugged on the sleeve of my shirt before grazing my flannel-covered thigh with his fingertips.
This is a good look for you, but the idea was to wear only what I left you.
All I saw was the T-shirt. Leaning close, he breathed me in, and his breath tickled the shell of my ear.
Exactly.
Ugh. Amelie carried her dishes to the sink, then fed her omelet to the disposal. I'm out. A horn honked long enough to convince me Boaz had left the front door open. Have they given you the scoop?
Nope.
He rolled his eyes.
They won't even share the location, so we're all riding together.
The family that conducts dark rites together stays together? I shoveled in another mouthful of omelet. Don't sacrifice too many virgins. Your parents probably had to special order them from out of town now that you're back.
There's only one virgin I'm interested in sacrificing, he purred.
The skin on my face ignited like the surface of the sun, and I was grateful for the darkness. The jerk might see my expression, but he couldn't pick out the red splotches rouging my cheeks. You are not sheathing your ceremonial dagger in my... I finished lamely. Sheath. You're so cute. His teeth closed over my pulse. I could eat you up. I'm a virgin, not an idiot. I grasp double entendres just fine.
I bet you do.
Spinning the fork on my palm, I jabbed him in the abs, and he jumped back while I cackled. Shoofly, don't bother me.
You're a cruel woman, Greer Woolworth.
He clutched his gut like I disemboweled him instead of checking him for doneness.
You're lucky I like claws. The more you scratch me, the worse the itch gets.
Short blasts from a car horn had him cursing under his breath. Maybe you should consult a dermatologist. I smiled, as sweet as you please. Or maybe a vet, since you've developed some odd cat fetish. Or would that require a psychiatrist?
We'll finish this later.
He darted in and ruffled my hair.
Later, squirt.
I bared my teeth and hissed at him just to hear him laugh his way out the door. Sadly, my antics didn't amuse Wooly. She remained stubbornly silent while I rinsed the dishes. Mourning the loss of Amelie's omelet, I put away the supplies littered across the counter. I reserved a few slivers of tomato and carried those into the living room. Keet, diurnal by nature, was snoozing on his perch when I popped in to check on him and left him with his treat. The skin at my nape prickled when I stepped out onto the front porch, and Wooly didn't rouse herself to protest against my exit. Usually I got a slamming door or flickering porch light, some outward indication she was in a tizzy over me leaving. The absolute stillness disturbed me enough I reached for the wards on instinct. A skull-rattling pain sliced through my scalp, and I gasped through the resonations that almost sent me crashing to my knees. The normally radiant song of her consciousness had quieted until I had to strain to make out even a note, and still she hadn't cried out in those final moments. Maybe because she couldn't. An oily blackness clung to the back door, seeping underneath and spilling across the hardwood planks. This was no temper tantrum. The wards had been breached. Wooly was... She was... silent. I took a running start and jumped off the porch into the yard, keeping a mental eye on the intruder. I shoved into the carriage house, retrieved the key, and battled with the smallest trunk to retrieve Maud's bag. This time the trunk behaved, so I set the bag on its lid and opened the ink to dip the brush for the sigil required to deepen my perception. Not waiting for it to dry, I pocketed the ink and the brush, then charged back into the house. The greasy taint stained the door leading down into the basement, but a quick check of its knob assured me the wards sealing off Maud's private laboratory remained secure. She had refreshed the wards protecting her sanctuary each night with blood straight from the vein. I doubted anything could crack the magical seal. I couldn't. But it made me uneasy that this thing had tried. Glimmers of spent magic sparkled out of the corner of my eye. Under the sigil's influence, the intruder left a shimmering slug trail of dark energy. I painted a few sigils for safety on my arm, but that was all the protection my weakened powers offered. A panicked chirrup caused my heartbeat to skip, and I bolted into the living room to face the intruder. Or not face him. He didn't have one. A mass of undulating robes whipped in an unfelt breeze. The wraith sensed me and whirled, its hood as empty as eternity. In his fist, he clutched Keet. Droppings oozed through his spectral fingers, but he didn't seem to mind. "Release him," I ordered, advancing on the wraith. "Let him go, and I won't banish you." I didn't have the strength to banish a wraith, but the wraith's master didn't have to know that. Rather than back down, The creature pulled a smoking envelope from the depths of its robes and passed it between the bars of the empty cage. Before I settled on a plan of action, he popped Keet like a snack into his absent mouth and vanished in a whirl of black mist. Keet! I spun in a circle, my mind touching on every corner of the collapsing wards. But I already knew what I'd find. Keet was gone. I spent the better part of an hour restoring the wards and rousing Wooly from her drugged slumber. The fact my house could be knocked unconscious terrified me. Whoever had controlled the wraith had managed to slip inside with a nasty bit of work that overlapped one of the weakened points in the wards. I snapped pictures of the combined sigils the intruder had used to gain access so I could show Odette later, then scrubbed the foul ink until red bubbles frothed through my fingers. The anchor wards surrounding Wilworth House were carved into the stone of her foundation. A little bit of blood shouldn't have overpowered inset patterns woven together by a master necromancer. But these had, and I worried this was more proof the old girl's strength mirrored mine. At least my puny magic wasn't at fault for the breakdown in communication between Wooly and me. As it turned out, someone had eroded key points in the sigils that had slowly eaten away at our link until the only time I registered the interference was when I made a focused effort to check the wards. Flicking the light on my phone, I started the grueling process of examining the foundation. I didn't have to look far before I spotted the first missing sigil, gouged from the stone with sharp claws. Great. Permanent damage. How was I supposed to repair this? It's not like I could lift up Wooly and slide a new slab under her. I found 5 more missing sigils that corresponded with the thinning of the wards I'd been sensing over the past several days. For now, the best I could do was dip my brush and swipe on fresh symbols. Those would keep until it rained, or at least until the dew faded them. After examining the patchwork wards with a critical eye, I decided they would do, and capped my ink. As much as I hated leaving Wooly while she was vulnerable, I had to honor my promise to Amelie. We both needed our jobs, and being haints paid better than anything else we could do while keeping our night owl schedule. I trudged up the steps and entered the house. Will you be okay for a few hours? The foyer chandelier dimmed to near blackness before surging. You have nothing to be ashamed of. I patted the doorframe. This is my fault. I should have pulled my head out of my butt sooner. All that wallowing hadn't gotten me anything except a violated home and a stolen pet. If I had taken the minor attacks more seriously, I might have noticed the damage to the sigils before the wraith. I spun on my heel, thought trailing, marching to Keith's empty cage, and fished out the envelope. Why am I not surprised? A nearby floor register ticked on and set a curtain wriggling in anticipation. It's from Dame Lawson, I told her, and opened the envelope with care. Guess I didn't RSVP fast enough for her. I skimmed the first line, then read the rest aloud for Wooly's benefit. Dearest Greer, I do hope you'll reconsider my previous invitation. Being named the Grand Dame of the Society for Post-Death Management is a momentous occasion, and I expect all my family to be in attendance. That includes you. Our relationship has been strained these past few years, but I hope to rectify that soon. Proof of my good intentions should be evident by now. You are standing in your own living room reading this letter. Are you not? You can thank me for that with your presence. The tinkle of crystals in the chandelier laughed at her gall in claiming me now that I'd been exonerated. Again, I rolled the vampire's warning around in my head. What did Dame Lawson want from me? What did he want? Why did anyone want anything from me at all when I had nothing but the clothes on my back and the roof over my head to my name? Dame Lawson hadn't just dispatched one of her lackeys to leave her calling card. Whoever the architect of this infiltration was, he was brilliant. And the energy, now that I'd had time to reflect, had definitely been male. With those grim thoughts circling, I walked into the kitchen, scooped up the invitation, and dialed the gas burner high on the stove. Then I took Boaz's advice and burned them both to cinders. The floor register gusted air in a relieved sigh as I swirled the ashes down the sink. We ought to be safe. For now. A tired exhale parted my lips. They got what they wanted. A hostage. The letter hadn't mentioned poor Keet, but it would have been incriminating if it had. And you didn't get to be the grand dame by making such rudimentary errors. The message was clear. Her wraith postman had done his job well, proving she could get to me and mine inside the wards. Inside the house. But why she would demand my presence at all stumped me. I was a half-trained assistant with no title and no prospects. The society had already added my inheritance to their coffers. They had seized control of my assets at my sentencing. Wooly had been the one thing I fought tooth and nail to keep. At the time, she had been flush with Maud's power, and no one but me could have given her to another master without her consent. So, really, that had less to do with my wishes and more to do with hers. A sliver of fear pierced me through the heart. What if that was the game? Letting her rot these past few years without a necromancer tending her wards. Wooly was weak, a shadow of her former self. But she would fight a new master to her death. Of that I was sure. But did the society care? Wooly was more than a house. More than my family. Her basement was a library full of books written in Maud's own hand. Her entire brilliant career. Every experiment. Every memory, every theory penned in leather-bound volumes. The collection was priceless, and the magical locks protecting her life's work could not be shattered without Maud's blood. And that was long gone. "I'll be back as soon as my shift ends," I comforted the house. "You remember how to use the phone?" The landline was a luxury I almost couldn't afford, but the connection to me soothed her. "Call if you need me." I checked to make sure my cell was fully charged. "I promise I'll come straight home tonight. No pit stops." The phone in my hand blared Miranda Lambert's "The House That Built Me," and my heart cracked open wider. She didn't want me to go. For once, her paranoia was founded. But that didn't change the fact that I couldn't hole up here forever. We needed money to keep the power on and the pantry stocked, and though I would never say so to her, Dame Lawson had proven I was no safer here than I was out in the wide world. I'll start making inquiries, see if I can't find someone willing to help me repair the foundation. Odette was my best bet. Others would ask more of me than I could give. Just sit tight. The old house creaked a pitiful sound that stoked the fire smoldering in my belly. "Everything is going to be okay," I promised her, and I hoped it wasn't a lie. Leaving her unguarded made me feel just as helpless and alone as Dame Lawson had no doubt intended. The ride to work blurred, and the tours dragged into eternity. Tips were low. More salt in the wound. I couldn't blame my victims, though. Tonight, my heart wasn't in spooking people, not when I had been so thoroughly spooked myself. And it showed. On my way out the door, I paused to beg a favor of Neely, then cut a path through the gloomy parking lot. I pulled up short when I noticed a man inspecting Jolene with a covetous eye. No, not a man. A vampire. The one whose warning had come too late. "Not you again."
"I had one of these once."
His pale fingers stroked the leather seat.
"A long time ago."
"Good for you." I jingled my keys in my palm. "Step aside." I wasn't about to get close to him while I was defenseless. "I need to get home."
"Have you given any more thought to what we discussed?"
He glanced up, quick silver eyes flashing.
You seem like a nice girl, and I don't like breaking pretty things.
That escalated quickly. I balled my fists to hide their trembling. Is this a three strikes, you're out kind of deal?
You received an invitation.
He sidestepped answering me.